Our guest today is Dr. Susan Madsen. She's a professor of management at Utah Valley University and also an Orrin R. Woodbury Professor of Leadership and Ethics. And you're also an independent leadership consultant and speaker. And it's great to have you here. Thank you, Dr.
Thank
Madsen.
You.
Obviously, leadership is your field of expertise. What grips you about leadership as a topic? What's fascinating about that?
Well, I love the topic of leadership in general. As you know, my focus is really on developing women leaders. But overall, I mean, leadership is so critical, and strong leadership is critical in all of the areas of society, including, leadership in schools or just even PTAs in schools and then with companies and so forth. And one of the things, you know, in the last decade or so that we write about is the lack of really positive leadership, those people that really have those skills to bring people together and move efforts and businesses forward in the most effective ways. So I just think it's so influential to businesses and society in general that it just fascinates me.
You're really interested in developing those skills for women, too.
Very much. I am very passionate about developing women. I interviewed 10 of the women governors in the United States and another one university presidents. My specific passion is how did they develop those leadership skills and competencies throughout their lives? So I've actually spent time interviewing and asking people about their childhood, their parents, what did they do in their homes, their school experiences up through high school, what made a difference for them, and then, of course, the college experience, and then even their development past then. So bottom line, Ryan, is what I'm passionate about is how do we develop more girls? How do we start when they're young to have voice, to feel like they have choice, and to really speak out and step forward to lead in whatever setting they decide to lead, whether that's, and I know we're going to talk about the briefs in just a minute, whether that's in nonprofit or business, whether that's even in their homes or in their churches, things that they don't even get paid for.
Let's talk about those research briefs. You started this project called the Utah Women in Leadership Project. Describe why you decided to do that and what that is.
So let me give a little background. Most people in the state know me for a project that I started in 2009 called the Utah Women in Education Project. And that's what I've really been working on and getting more women to know that they need to go to college and graduate from college. I kind of went off with that project of my main area, which is women in leadership. And while in the last couple of years, I've done so much speaking in the community on women in education, but also women in leadership. And I've had so many say, so where do we sit in Utah in terms of the status of women? I've heard that over and over again at events that I've spoken at. And I really kind of felt, and I call it the call, as a researcher and as someone that is connected in the community, to be able to really help us as citizens and residents in Utah know where we're at. Where are we at in terms of women in leadership? And so really last August, put together just a simple website that has resources and so forth, and then was able to get some funding for a research assistant to be able to then put together these four briefs. And of course, when I start a project, I always think they're going to take less time. But if, and I know, Ryan, you have read all of these briefs. Mm-hmm. And the research and the data collecting, the data was actually a lot of work on every single one to bring it together. But I'm very excited, and I think there's a lot of appreciation for these in the community because it really gives us kind of the baseline. Here's where we're at in 2014. It also, what I produce briefs for is not just to give us that foundation, but to make us uncomfortable a little bit. And you have to be somewhat uncomfortable or else you're not going to change. And that's another purpose of these briefs is to put it out there. We know where we stand, but we say, you know what? This isn't quite right. We do need more women, whether it's in education, K-12, whether it's in higher ed, nonprofits, businesses, politics.
Those are the four areas that you covered in your briefs.
It was
nonprofits, businesses, education, and politics.
Yes.
Why those four areas?
Those are the areas that I'm most involved with, but I really think those are the areas that really cover much of where the leadership topics or leadership conversations are. The first one in January was politics, and we've got to have more women in politics in the state. It's just so important. We have wonderful, many wonderful men, but we need a diverse set. So it's just because the legislative session was coming up, and it was good timing for that. I have done a lot of work in the community with nonprofit leaders. They have been so involved in my work with women in education and so forth that I felt like that was important as well. Education, I actually founded a group in Utah called the Utah Women in Higher Education Network that is specifically designed, and we had over 500 people a couple Fridays ago at UVU at a conference, to help women develop leadership. So I've done research. I've written some books and articles on developing women in higher education. So, but the K through 12 and higher education together, that whole education, that is so many employees in our state. I mean, that's a huge number of employees. And then, of course, the other big bucket, I call them, are businesses and for-profit businesses, which include, and this report really, Ryan, focused on the larger ones. That's what we really focused on. And there's other research, because we do rate in some new reports, we do rate higher in terms of women entrepreneurs and starting companies.
Why do you think that is?
Well, we know, first of all, especially in Utah County and other places, but Utah County is very big in entrepreneurship and new businesses. But women are starting more businesses. A lot of the really small businesses are started by women. That is, the research talks about that actually a lot, mm-hmm. and why women do that. Sometimes women just feel discounted sometimes in business situations because their voice is not being heard. And sometimes they leave and they want to do their own business because of that. They have that flexibility. But also, we have many women. I have four kids myself. I happen to have four. We have many women with children, but still want to earn some money and still want to do some things. And they love, and we actually have a lot of companies based around crafts and scrapbooking and some of those things that women just find as their passion. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I just met a couple of women who just loved jewelry. One a couple years ago went through a divorce, and she had done it just to play, you know, just to have fun and enjoy it, and then turned that into an actual business after her divorce, and it's actually very successful.
It seems like with a smaller business, too, or something you start, you feel like you have a little more flexibility with your time and how much work you actually want to put into it.
Absolutely. And many of the women start the businesses in their homes. And I happen to be, I haven't started a small business like that, but I happen to telecommute quite a bit. My best writing and thinking, and when I put together these briefs, I don't do that at my office at UVU. I get lots of interruptions there. I actually do it from home. And I like doing it from home. I'm very productive, but I'm also there when my kids come home from school. And so for those of us that really love being involved in lots of things, but really want to be a good mother and be there and be, and, you know, doing the carpools with the kids, it just gives you more flexibility, and you're making your own rules. You know, you are making decisions for yourself on what you love, what you want to do, when you're going to work, and to be there with your children as well.
Since we're talking about business, in your business brief about women leaders in Utah business, you note that in most of the bigger companies or corporations in Utah, or that have influence in Utah, there are very few women at the top.
Yes.
Why is it that the bigger companies seem to struggle with gender diversity?
Well, actually, in terms of CEO levels, that's the case.
It's only 11 Utah companies have female CEOs. Is that right?
Yeah, it's very low. In fact, we are about 10% below the national level. The national level in terms of corporate CEOs by gender, and we're looking at the 100 companies and above of employees, 100 employee companies. So it's about 10%. We're about 4.8%, and the national is about 14.1%. So we struggle there. Actually, in terms of corporate board seats, oftentimes the larger companies actually have more females on their boards because they have bigger boards.
Okay.
And sometimes they are in the public eye a little bit more and want to show some diversity. So we do have a few more there, but we're still below the national average substantially in terms of CEOs, in terms of presidents, in terms of board seats for for-profit organizations for women.
There's a lot of, throughout the four briefs that you released, there's a lot of comparison between what happens nationally versus what happens here in Utah. It seems like across the board, whether we're talking about business or politics or education, nonprofits not so much. Yeah. It just seems like there's less representation for women.
Absolutely. Nonprofits was the exception, and that wasn't a big surprise.
Why not?
Just because with nonprofits, I was slightly surprised. I thought we would be a little lower, and we're just slightly lower with that chief executive position, but we're right on track with boards and so forth. Nonprofits really are that area where women really feel called to kind of go in that direction. They love their efforts towards things that really make a difference for society, even more than men do. And so there's a lot of reasons that are talked about in that brief why we might be on par with the national average. We have a lot of people in Utah that volunteer, too, and a lot of women that volunteer for organizations. And I think as they volunteer, they get opportunities to lead, and then they realize this is really important, and I can influence, and I have a voice, and then are willing at that point to really step up and be on boards or move into those prominent, positions at the top of those nonprofits.
So psychologically, it's just an easier place for women to enter.
It's a nice fit. Uh-huh. It's a nice fit for some. There's a lot of women, and like I said, more than men, really want to see their efforts be helpful, efforts that they know help children and help people that are homeless and help women maybe that are disadvantaged and have gone through abuse or divorce and so forth. So it feels like a good place. But as I've gone into the research, Ryan, it is so clear that teams of all kinds, including leadership teams, really do better when they have diverse voices. And it is so true. I mean, people will tell you that from experience, but the research does say that more diverse teams and leadership, they just think, they get a bunch of people who think differently. And the research says that decisions that come out of diverse teams are more innovative, they're more creative, they end up being more productive in the long run. Sometimes people say, well, are they more efficient in making decisions? Not necessarily, because you have diverse opinions. But once all of those opinions are valued and the best decisions are made by the group, then the research is supportive that that's a much better decision in the long run than a group that just has generally white males, They just, not that they don't have good thinking, it's just that we all think differently.
It seems like I'm just getting the sense that the fact that women aren't as well represented in politics seems to be one of the most important parts of this whole thing for you?
I would say, yes. I do think this, having more women represented in politics, and my report really just focused on five areas, which are kind of the largest for the state and Congress and some different things. And we did go to mayor, but there's so many other positions within local government and so forth that need that. And your question back to what can we do? Bottom line, there's two kinds of what we call barriers. And I don't like to spend all my time talking about barriers, but we need to talk about them. And one are external barriers, and then the other one is our internal barriers. And both of them need attention. The internal barriers are things sometimes within ourselves, and that comes from socialization, the way we see roles, the way experiences in our homes or how we've seen things in our teachers and their opinions, and just the way we were raised. And sometimes we think, and I have met with many women in Utah that say, well, it's really the man's job to be the voice or whatever. When in reality, women have as critical voices that need to be heard as men. And some people just don't understand that. So sometimes, in fact, in Sandberg, who is the COO of Facebook, she wrote a book called Lean In. And that's one of the things that she talked about is sometimes we don't raise our hands when we can. Sometimes we lean back and say, we'll let someone else do that, instead of leaning in and saying, I need to be engaged. And so those things often, and when we do leadership development for women, we do work on those things. And those are important, and that's a piece of it that we need to work with. But the other piece are external barriers. And sometimes within systems, within the legislature, within, you know, there's a old boys kind of network going. And when you get a female in there, it's really hard. You have to be really tough because it's, you get kind of cold shouldered sometimes and some different things. So there are, and just in the workplace, you know, there's wage gaps. There's sometimes discrimination in hiring practices and those things that are all kind of part of that. So there really are external barriers and internal barriers, even within politics. There are. And so as someone that kind of likes to talk and lead change, I always bring into the conversation that we need to help women with those internal barriers and really develop skills and confidence and those things. But we also need to be working on those external barriers as well.
In talking with female politicians, I've noticed that they seem reluctant to acknowledge that there's a barrier there, that there's an old boys kind of club going on. But you see that there.
Oh, it's in many situations, even mm-hmm. in higher education. You see that in certain institutions and so forth. Yeah, I hear stories about just small things. You know, one thing I'll say is no matter what people say, we all have stereotypes and we all have biases. And oftentimes, well, I'll tell you, when someone tells, especially a man, when a man says to me, or a woman, I don't really have stereotypes, I've worked through those, that's a red flag. Because I have stereotypes and I study this kind of thing. So whether, I mean, you just make comments and do things and make assumptions because of the stereotypes you have. And unless you are incredibly aware of those and can stop yourself a little bit, and many of those stereotypes relate to gender, that men do these things, women do these things. For instance, one of my friends who's a senator, she really worked on Senator Henderson. She worked on tax issues. And I think that is fabulous that she did that, and she loves it. But many people would look at those kinds of issues and assume that a man would be chairing that committee, or a man, that women don't really like that, when in reality, many women do. But you just have assumptions that go through that. So if we ever say there aren't barriers and so forth, I think we're fooling ourselves a little bit. I happen to be raised with six brothers, so I don't mind being in things. I don't see as much as many women because I'm used to being in the mix with a lot of boys growing up and did sports and so forth. But I really have to work with myself and question myself on, well, what are those assumptions and so forth. So,
I mean, like I said earlier, these briefs seem to show that there's a national trend, and it's not good for women nationally in most of these areas. But it's even worse for women. In fact, at the beginning of every one of these briefs, you note from the Center for American Progress, Utah is 50th in terms of women holding positions of decision-making and leadership. Mm-hmm. Is there something different about Utah?
Well, I think what I just talked about, that combination of internal and external barriers, is alive and well here in Utah, as it is in other states. But oftentimes, we do have more women that have more children and like to stay home and so forth. And what I found often is, from the research, is even when women, their kids are in school and so forth, sometimes in my Women in Education research, I found this lack of integration. They thought, well, life is all about this one thing until I'm in a different phase, and then it's about another thing. And it's all or nothing, kind of, when in reality, we can be integrated. For instance, if a woman decides to be home with kids, which I've done, which was great, it's a lot of work, and we don't get money for it, but it's great. Many women don't see that they can actually at the same time serve on community boards or work part-time, do a number of different things at the same time. So I think that might be one of them. But I think we just have a more traditional view of roles of man and woman, and many of those are great and wonderful, and I have somewhat of that myself, but I think across the state we have more of that. So when women choose to stay home, I say wonderful if that's your choice, but you can still have voice. There are many ways to step out in the community or in your churches and be confident and have voice. If you're a mom and you're staying home with kids, you can still do wonderful things in the community. I think those things actually prepare you so when you're ready, maybe your kids are all in school or they're older and have moved out of the house, that you can step into some other roles in the community, whether it's on boards of nonprofits or those kinds of things, inside and outside our homes. And you know what? I've been able to also speak at the United Nations in New York City and in Geneva. And when you see the needs of countries in Africa and different parts of the world, I do research in the Middle East as well. I feel like we here in Utah, many of us are middle, upper class kind of people, and we have gifts and even funds to be able to say, how do we help within our state, but how do we reach beyond ourselves and really help within the world? And I think we need more people, more of our women in Utah. I'm not saying the home is not important at all, because
right,
that is,
yeah. No,
but
I know.
Saying, how can I continue to prepare myself to be smarter and speak better and all those competencies so that I can be prepared to help in ways nationally and internationally that I don't even see are options right now. Because if you're not prepared, if you don't develop yourself, even while your kids are young, if you don't be educated and developed, then you're not ready for some really cool opportunities that you could have to help other women have voice, even in different countries.
I wanted to ask you just a little bit more about your research.
Mm-hmm.
Going into it, did you have any preconceived ideas about what the results might be? Were you surprised? Were you disappointed by what you found out?
You know, I was pretty, I keep kind of on top of what's happening within our state with the work I've done with women in education and then speaking and preparing. So I am thinking back as I have written these. I don't think I had any major surprises. But I do, you know, I expected the nonprofit to be pretty close to, as you said, comparing the nation to Utah. And I already knew from previous reports where we generally stood in terms of nonprofit. And I knew we were down in politics and so forth. But I'll tell you, I was surprised at that political brief a little bit, especially in that brief. And I would encourage anyone who's listening to read it. It actually talks about it. We have one statistic, and we couldn't go back further than 1971. But in 1971, we actually found that we had more female legislators than the rest of the nation.
Yeah, I remember.
And we couldn't go back anymore. It was really hard to get the political data that we have because no one was tracking it. So it came down to just going through pages and pages to try and websites. But that kind of surprised us.
Why do you think that was?
Well, it goes back to one thing that in my Utah Women in Education research, what we found was even back through the pioneer days, we were actually more educated than the rest of the nation in terms of females. And then in the 90s, it started, the national level went up, and we kind of started going down. And in 2001, it really crossed where we were below the national average.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just slightly, we've seen that trend in politics where, you know, we were one of the first couple of states to give women the right to vote.
I think.
I think it was second.
Mm-hmm.
That is huge. That says a lot about the value of women and their voices here in Utah, even way back then. But as the nation has gone up, we just have not gone up. We've gone below the national average. And so I really think there's been changes. And people ask me this all the time, and I don't have the historical data at all. I'm just saying it. My gut says that, you know, there's been some changes maybe in the 50s and 60s and 70s where there's more of a separation between women's role is here. I mean, in the pioneer days, everybody just had to work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You were out doing gardens. You were working together. And in general, specifically in the United States, in the 50s and 60s and 70s, there was such a separation of men did this and now women do this. And that wasn't throughout all time, right? I mean, when you look at the history of women, that is not. And so I think there's just been some changes nationally, but maybe more prominent here in Utah in terms of this is my role and this is the husband's role. And I do believe we, for me, I have a different role a little bit than my husband, you know, through the years. And I appreciated, even though it was challenging staying home with kids, I really wanted to. I mean, that was my choice to do so. So yeah. I'm not, you know, I have to be careful with that because I really think that our children need good parents mm-hmm. and people to spend time with them and stuff. And that's the next generation. But in general, I just think we have, and I have to say, Ryan, I've had to work with myself on this. We have our perceptions of maybe what's appropriate and what's not. And I would just say to women, and I do this to my students and my male students, to just look at that really carefully instead of just making an assumption that you don't analyze. Say, what does that mean? You know, because you choose to stay home with children, that doesn't mean you don't have a voice. You can actually, because you have more flexibility in your schedule, you can actually have a powerful voice in the community.
Yeah. If you're a mother and you do go out and work, is there a stigma here where it says to other people, she doesn't care as much about mothering, she's too concerned about her job?
You know, women, I'm going to say I don't think it's any different. Well, it's not much different here in Utah than the rest of the nation. Yeah, I mean, women struggle with that all the time. And I do think we make these assumptions sometimes that, and some women who are stay-at-home moms full-time feel embarrassed to say, well, this is what I'm choosing to do, because they say that some other women maybe and men look down on them for that. And I would say shame on them, you know, shame on the people that look down, because that is such a noble thing to do. And it is harder for me to stay home with kids than go out and work. So, but you're right. I mean, sometimes we do have that. I know for me, I've you know, one of the things that I have to say is that we have to be careful about judging people because we don't really know their situations. And I think I used to be more judgmental until I've gone through raising some kids, and one in particular has been really challenging, my oldest. And then I realized, you know, you never know what people are going through in their lives and the choices they make. And we sometimes just say, shame on you for working outside the home, when in reality, I know in my life, at a certain point, once my kids were in school, I mean, I felt called to do that. That was what I think I've been prepared to do, is to teach people and influence people. But it is sometimes those things where we look at someone and just make that, you know, Ryan, you have long hair, so you must be, you know what I mean? We just make that, we make that assumption, when in reality, it's so amazing how off we are sometimes.
I know. Yeah, my listeners aren't supposed to know that I have long hair.
Oh, sorry.
So. No, it's okay.
You have different lives. And one of the things that I have challenged myself to just look at people and look at their gifts. And every single person has gifts that are amazing. And with our women here in Utah specifically, I think many of them don't understand how many gifts and what they do amazingly well. They just think everybody does it. When in reality, I mean, every woman, if I can just spend like 15 or 20 minutes with every woman, I could just see these amazing things, and I don't think they know. And therefore, I think it affects sometimes their voice, because they don't know that they are unique. They don't know they have these strengths, and they don't know that they can make it, they can help change things and really make a difference in our society.
One last question. Do you have hope for these trends to reverse or continue?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we're doing a lot right now in the higher education area to really help train. The more you are aware of who you are and understand who you are and understand opportunities, the more you're willing to actually step forward and say, you know what, I want to do this. I want to step forward. So I think the more we talk about this, well, for instance, in the political area, I was talking to Deidre Henderson, who's a senator, mm-hmm. and she had all of her kids in school. She has a great story, and didn't work outside the home as much. But then someone asked her to volunteer, or somehow, I'm butchering this story, but volunteer for this politician who was local. And she realized through volunteering that She loved it. And she had a voice, and she was articulate at those kinds of things. And then just in a series of maybe 3 years, she really went in that direction of now and went, you know, went through an election and is now a senator. So I think one of the things that we can do is to continue, as in higher education, but in the community, is continue to encourage women to be involved, encourage them to do professional development, learn more about themselves, understand that they really have some gifts that they can step forward and help in our state in political areas as well as nonprofit and so forth.
Well, Dr. Madsen, I really want to thank you for coming in and talking with me. It's a fascinating topic for me, and I hope it's fascinating for listeners as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And if you want to find out more about the research that Dr. Madsen has done, go to uvu.edu/UWLP.